Welcome to Your Best Riding Life. I'm your host, Linda Goldfarb. Each week, you receive tips and strategies from experts in the riding and publishing industry to help you excel in your craft. I'm so glad that you're listening in today. Our topic is the troubles in publishing. Oh, folks, there are troubles in publishing. And our guest is the expert that we need to bring some light into this topic. Today, we have Steve Lobby, and he is well known in the Christian writing industry. Steve is the president and founder of the Steve Lobby Agency, a veteran of the bookselling industry with nearly 40 years of experience. In the 1980s, he was a bookstore manager and was awarded the National Store of the Year by the Christian Booksellers Association. He then spent over a decade with Bethany House Publishers and was named the Editor of the Year by the Advanced Writers and Speakers Association. Over 16 years ago, he became an agent, where he and his agency have represented nearly 2,000 new books. And Steve was named Agent of the Year by American Christian Fiction Writers. He was also inducted into the Grand Canyon University Hall of Fame by their College of Theology. He is married with three grown children and one grandchild. Steve, I'm looking forward to all that you have to share with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Now, before we hit hard on the content that we've got, we're going to pause for just a minute, and we're going to take a look at the inside life of our expert. Steve, I want you to take a moment and share something most people may not know about you.
I always love these kind of questions. All right, so I was born in Alaska before it was a state. So right away, you can date me if you'd like. Not as in going out for dinner, but as in chronological. lived there first 14 years of my life. And then mom and dad were tired of Alaska after 25 years and decided to move to Honolulu, where I went to high school. So as I like to tell people, I went from the 49th to the 50th, and then in college moved to the 48th state, which is Arizona. And I have no plans on continuing that countdown by moving to New Mexico, because that's the 47th state. So it also means in my time in Alaska, most people don't remember this, but the largest earthquake in the history of North America, I was in the middle of in 1964, at the end of March, on Good Friday, when the 9.2 Richter scale earthquake hit Anchorage, Alaska, and destroyed the home that we were living in. And I was in the basement with my mom. So lots of memories as a little child of great terror and noise and cacophony, and I've never forgotten it.
Wow. That is something to live through. I'd lived in Japan and went through earthquake there, but nothing like what you went through while you were a young man. I'm glad you had a basement.
Well, as I like to tell people, that basement wasn't end of the ground. It was a basement floor that looked out on the backyard with a plate glass window.
Wow.
I could see the trees literally waving in the background back and forth as the ground was undulating in front of me. My mom was thrown to the ground and dodged the upright piano for 4.5 minutes as it was rolling back and forth across the floor. So yeah, there's some pretty vivid memories there of that time, but that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about other earthquakes.
We are here to talk about other earthquakes. Thank you for that segue, Steve. Let's go straight into the content for today, which is the troubles in publishing. So, Steve, what are we facing right now? What troubles are impacting the publishing industry today?
Well, the problem with a topic like this is that it's so vast and broad. And, you know, I tend to say, so when has publishing not been in trouble? There's always some sort of upset or change or challenges that have faced the industry in the almost four decades that I've been a part of it. So there's a new thing that has come into the industry right now that has caught a lot of publishers by surprise. And if you're an indie author trying to do print runs, you're running into the same problem. And that is the printing process. There's a shortage right now in the industry of outlets for print. It started back in 2019, almost a year ago now, when the two largest U.S. printers both were facing severe financial troubles, and they tried to merge. So one was buying out the other, or merging, however you want to call it. Both were heavily debt-ridden from their acquisitions in the past. And the problem was, is the Justice Department declared it a monopoly and skewered the sale and the merger. So the first of this year, 2020, both of them declared bankruptcy. Now, bankruptcy doesn't mean something goes out of business. It just means it has to reorganize, right? Well, the problem is, part of reorganization means cutting expenses. So one of them began closing plants left and right, and then the pandemic hit, which just exacerbated the problem dramatically. And you might say, so what, Steve? Who cares? I mean, what's the big deal? Well, if there's not the capacity to print books, then you have a backlog on the places that can print books. So what you'll have usually is a 4 to maybe 5 week time frame from the time you give a book to the printer to the time it comes off the press. Now, that just simply means it leaves the printing press and then is shipped to the warehouse, which is then shipped to Amazon and Spring Arbor and Ingram and all the other outlets and whatnot. So you have that lead time. Well, that lead time has gone from 4 to 5 weeks to 7 to 8 weeks. So imagine, for those of you who have been involved in the production of a book, that means your editorial deadlines get pushed back another month. Most companies did not have that baked in. And so suddenly you found books being delayed, and it's starting to affect sales. On top of that, next month, approximately 2 weeks or so after the election, the new memoir from former President Obama is coming out. The print run, hardcover print run on that book is 3 million copies. No one printer in the country can handle that large of a print order, because it means running the presses 24 hours a day for who knows how long to print that many. So what they do is they split the print run among multiple vendors. Well, think about the implication. That means those vendors suddenly don't have a place for your book. And so you end up with this logjam. And the pandemic, on the other hand, also hit places like print-on-demand printing. Those of you who use Ingram Lightning Source or Ingram Spark, even Amazon's Kindle Direct, suddenly found instead of a 2 week turnaround or a 10 day turnaround, it was suddenly a month and then suddenly 5 weeks. Now, Ingram has made a big deal about their investment in new staffing and equipment and all that. Says that's fine for a press release, but going out and hiring 100 qualified technicians who can start work tomorrow, it doesn't happen that fast. And so you see, this is one of those troubles. And it's not something that hits the public necessarily. Yeah, there's books that get delayed and you go, oh, so what's the big deal? Well, if you're an author and you had big plans for your October 20th or October 27th release party, and even though it might be virtual or however you're going to handle it, you have all of these plans all tied together to the publication date. And if that publication date gets bumped by 10 days, all the plans go out the window. So one way to get around this for you authors is try not to plan your events too close to the published publication date. Give yourself some space to make sure you actually have books. And you might say, well, I do everything in ebook. That's fine. But that's half of your sales, hopefully, not 100%. If you ignore the print side of this business, you're ignoring up to 50% of potential sales. And, you know, the pendulum has begun to swing back to physical books that people like to have in their hands and mark up and, you know, and it's not an age thing either. That's also the millennials like it too. So anyway, all it's to say is that if you're running into this problem, don't panic, just plan for it. You know, as they say, hope for the best, plan for the worst.
Yes.
I mean, if everything goes swimmingly and you have books in hand, well, good, you have books in hand. Your book will still be new. Now, another little tip here to our listeners here. as we get closer to the end of this calendar year, especially if you're independently publishing. If your book has a publication date of December, not November, you can't do it in November, but if it's a publication date in December, you can put next year's date in the copyright page.
Really?
Yeah. So if it's published in December, you can have a 2021 publication date, which technically, or at least visibly, makes a new book for an entire year. But if you publish in December and put a 2020 publication or copyright date in January, it's considered a year old. So that's just a little tip for some of you folks. But don't do it in November. You're breaking rules. And you can get yourself in trouble with the ISBN people and all that kind of stuff. I mean, nobody's going to probably look that carefully. But don't try to game the system too much. But if it's in December, you can have a 21 publication date.
Now, can they do that? Do they do that as well in traditional publishing?
Yes, that's where it comes from.
It's a behind the curtain moment. Those of us that don't know, we don't know, but those right. that do. So you're sharing with us a look behind the curtain. I really like that. I greatly appreciate that.
Well, and it's not written down anywhere. I can just tell you that. Try to Google it. You probably will find it somewhere. Google is kind of amazing that way. One implication, though, if you're choosing a December pub date, that publication date is the same no matter what. I mean, that's published and very visible. And certain contests have calendar restrictions as to if you can enter or not. So we've run into problems with people, trouble, to stick with our theme.
Right.
Published in December and then can't enter the next year's competition because it was published in the wrong year. Mm. So that's just something to consider. And I'll tell you, every contest has different rules. And sometimes they'll make an exception if it's actually a pub date in December. But you just kind of have to watch that.
This is good. What you just shared with me is something I would not even be thinking about. That there is a limit on the paper, a limit on how many books can be printed because everyone now is under this great pressure. So,
a lot of publishers do publish overseas. They'll publish in Hong Kong, Korea, India. But then you have that lead time. It takes an extra month for the books to be shipped because they don't air freight them. They put them on a boat. You know, we've heard the slow boat to China. That's where it comes from.
Because it literally is.
Yeah, almost all Bibles are printed in mainland China, believe it or not, because it's the cheapest.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I was in China. I had an opportunity. I toured in China for 23 days with the theater group that I'm a part of. Saw a lot of China, but this is a fact that I did not walk away with. So,
well, this was going back to the politics of the tariffs that were hitting the China-American trade. Mm-hmm. And if the tariffs had come through, well, they did come through, but that would have meant Bibles would have received a tariff because they would be shipped from China. And so ECPA, the Evangelical Christian Publishers Association, and a number of major Bible publishers, Zondervan, Nelson, Tyndale, all actually went to Washington, D.C. and made an appeal and got Bibles removed from the tariff, because otherwise all the Bible prices would have gone up. Who knew, right?
Who knew? Okay, so these are definite troubles in the publishing industry. Is there anything else that we need to be aware of that's maybe happening between now and the end of the year, or even what we're looking into as we go into 2021?
You know, it's a constant issue for authors, especially new ones who are coming into this industry, you know, who have aspirations of working with traditional publishers. This quote-unquote trouble has been an issue forever, but it's very hard for a debut author to have an opportunity to be published by the traditional publishers. You know, that proposal you put together, don't give an editor or an agent a reason to say no. Be incredibly professional. Make that presentation absolutely sing. It's a terrible metaphor, and it breaks down completely in a very rapid way. But imagine you're making your book proposal in front of the Shark Tank. So if you get up there and kind of go, "Hi, my name's Steve, and I wrote a really good book, and you will like it. My mom thinks it's great." You're not going to get a lot of excitement from Mark Cuban.
No.
So imagine I'm the Mark Cuban or the Simon Cowell on America's Got Talent.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, Steve, I can imagine that. I do watch Shark Tank. And so I'm like, yes, I could see you being him. So bring it. Bring it. Yeah. That's what I want to know.
I try to resist rolling my eyes, but when I'm here in my office, I do it rather frequently. And I'm not trying to mock anybody. It's just some people just aren't prepared for the conversation. This is a business. It's a business of changing lives. So this is serious business, my friends. Serious business. We have been tasked and given a calling and a gift from God the Father Almighty to take these words for his kingdom to make a difference. And if we slapdash something together, throw it out there and go, "So what do you think?" You know, that's not excellence. I mean, even Paul's letters, there's a call to excellence there in all that we do. People say, "Well, Steve, why are you so hard on me?" Well, this is why. We're not playing around here. We're actually trying to create something that is going to make a difference. So you might say, "Okay, I've written the most marvelous book in the world." And I probably will agree with you. Yes, it is a marvelous book. So what? That's a really harsh phrase, and it sounds really mean. But I'm challenging you, say, give me a reason to buy it. Because no one will read your book until they buy it. So the ministry of your book begins at the point of sale. You go to a major traditional publishing house. You've got 7 incredibly well-written books on the publication board table. And you've got all these people in the room whose jobs are on the line on the choices they make that day. Yours is one of the 7, but you have 27 people on your email list. You have 33 people on Instagram because you tried it for a day. You haven't updated your blog in a year, and your blogs are dated. They have the date on them. So in other words, you've abandoned your blog. But you like Facebook. Well, who knows who you are? If I were to Google you, am I going to find you? Is there anything that says to me, "Wow, this is the person we want to invest," and I'm talking as a publisher now, "we want to invest $50,000 in this person, and we all want to put our jobs on the line for this person"? Or in the other 6, there's someone who has 25,000 people on their mailing list. They have 100,000 followers on Instagram, and they blog regularly and have a extraordinary content that comes out, and they are out speaking. Well, now during the pandemic, they're not doing a lot of speaking, but they're out speaking, they're visible. So which one is the publisher going to choose? Both books are books on, let's just say, holiness. Just pick a topic. Which one are they going to buy? They're both equally good. But which one is easier to sell? That's the question the publisher's asking. So that trouble, to use our theme, is a constant issue. I just had a conversation with a wonderful author just this past week. Has had success with a variety of major publishers who you would know in our industry, but had resigned from his megachurch a few years ago and had taken a much quieter path, not for any, you know, salacious reason, just simply a calling to step away from the limelight. Well, the problem is that affects his ability to sell his books. And so while his content is still there, his visibility is not. And the last book that was published by this gentleman was 8 years ago. Well, in publishing terms, that's an eternity.
Right.
He basically has to start over. Well, he's starting over at 0. And even in the conversation, he admitted, "You know, I'm really not into letting people know about my books at all." And I said, "Well, then you probably should publish for the purpose of your ministry. There's no shame in that, and there's no harm in that. You use Kindle Direct Publishing, and it's on Amazon. That means anybody in the world can get it at any time. But where your efforts are is to minister to your constituency. So let's focus on that. These are true issues that we must face. And as a literary agent, I'm looking for that author who's going to make me go, oh, wow, that's really amazing. And look, they are prime. They really want to get the word out.
They're active. You're being proactive. It's not waiting until you put the manuscript in front of an agent and say, don't you think this is good? Now I'm going to start getting the word out about it.
Yeah.
No, tell me what you have been doing. What have you been working on for the past 6 months or to a year? And there's something we can all be doing to be proactive in getting the message out. Because when we write, I mean, we're writing to make that impact, but part of that writing is based on, or at least my feeling is, what is God calling me to do right now? How is this impacting those that I'm speaking to right now? And so we can have that interaction between those that are potential readers and get them ready so that when it comes out, they're like, yes, I want that. And I'm telling a whole bunch of people about it. I'm going to tell 30 and you tell 30 and go and go and go and go. So we have to really look ahead. And that way we're not going to be sidelined ourselves. I think sometimes in the Christian market, people actually are way too nice. They're too nice. They're like, oh, that's so good. I mean, people would say that to me about my writing, like they don't want to offend me. And I go, good. What is good? Like, well, there's something you've got to change up.
Yeah, to use our American Idol comparison.
Yes.
Marla Paula Abdul, who said, they're so nice. And then you have everyone waits for Simon Cole to drop the hammer. Because Paula Abdul will never drop the hammer. And, you know, again, we can, you know, play around with that silliness. But at the same time, there is a sense that while you, and this goes back, Linda, to something you said earlier. We write. There's a couple reasons why we write. Sometimes we're writing for ourselves. It's a way to work through an issue or thinking on topics, or even just writing stories. It's just a feeling or a way to express it. The second level is that immediate community with whom that we interact, that we're writing for them. I write a blog every Monday from the agency's website, and I have very much in mind the fact that there's approximately 3,000 people reading it. Very aware. It's like a large church. And I also realized that not all 3,000 of them come to church every Sunday either.
True. So
the audience is definitely different every week. But then you have to think from a business standpoint, the publication standpoint, you're now writing to people who don't know you, who have never heard of your idea. And they are ready to spend $15 to $20 on you. Why? That's why I wrote a blog once. Would you even buy your own book if you didn't know who you were? Mm. You take your book on grief, stick it on the shelf. Well, there are probably 50 to 100 incredible books on the topic of grief by very famous people. So why do you deserve a place on that shelf? And that's the question that the grumpy agent and the cynical editor and the board marketing person at a publishing company ask. So when you pitch something to an agent or to an editor or to a marketing person, you want to have a couple reactions. The first one is, cool, I can sell that. And the second reaction is, what's it about? Because I haven't read it yet. That's why the cover letter is important. That's why the first page of the book proposal is important. It's the cover of your book without pictures. It's that hook. It's that, give me a reason to buy this. I have 10,000 books in my library. Why would I want one more? And why would I want to, you know, get rid of J.I. Packer to put you on there instead? I know these are horrible questions. These can be very depressing. At the same time, if I may, I'll use a metaphor which I use at a lot of conferences. If you don't know the landscape that you're about to enter, you're probably going to fail. And the landscape of traditional publishing, even independent publishing, is Mount Everest. It's the largest mountain in the world, and it's dangerous. People die climbing that mountain. So why do so many people show up at the base camp wearing a tank top and flip-flops? They're not prepared. They have not done their research. They've not done their work. But there are others who come to that base camp, and they've gone to Cabela's or Bass Pro Shop, and they have big puffy coats. They've got the goggles. They've done altitude training in the Rockies. They've hired a Sherpa, me. They're ready to go. And they climb that mountain, and guess what? You can still have a disaster on the way up that mountain. But let's take the metaphor one step further. Let's say you do climb the mountain. You get to the very top, and you plant your flag. Let's hope it's the Christian flag. But you plant your flag.
Right.
And your Sherpa turns to you and goes, that was fun. Let's do it again. Because this isn't a one-off thing. You do it again and again and again and again. Because that's what we're called to do. One book is fine. Two books is better. Three books is amazing. Do you have a career or is this a hobby? Ask yourself that question. It can change your entire perspective in approaching this business of publishing. Yeah, that's full of troubles, but we overcome them. Goodness, I have watched all sorts of economic disasters. I've watched publishers be sold. I've watched publishers go out of business. I've seen the whole gamut of these kinds of things in our industry. And interesting that God's kingdom continues to grow and to build and be served.
Amen. Well, this has been needed. What you've offered us is needed. I am kind of that bullet point kind of gal myself, and I do tend to lean into the pull up your bootstraps and let's get going when I'm working with clients or just, you know, even with my family members. To me, that shows that I care for you. So, Steve, when you shared your truth about troubles, the way that I received it was, if you didn't care, if you didn't care about the industry, if you didn't care about bringing that excellence to the publishing market, to those that are waiting for that next book that's going to change their life, then you wouldn't even be speaking this into anybody. You'd just say, hey, yeah, go out there and throw that out there. That'll be good. Good on you. But you care enough. I've said this to my children. I care enough to allow you to hate me as long as it takes for you to realize how much I love you. And so there are times we have to say what needs to be said so that people really get their eyes opened. And I like that you said these are questions we have to ask ourselves. What am I bringing? Would I read my own book? Would I buy it? Would I spend money? Why? And who really knows you? Are there enough people who know you or those who know you that can help you in this industry as well? So there are troubles, but there's answers to those too. What were you going to say?
As I like to say, this is a kind of a calling of my own, is to speak that hard truth, but with a tincture of hope within it.
Mm.
This doesn't mean that, oh, Steve Lobby's a grump and he hates everybody and everything, because that's not true. You know, I just landed another debut nonfiction author the other day whose platform was modest, but the topic was so well done and so unique. Mm. And an editor agreed, and it's published, and, you know, someone I've met at a writer's conference, first-time author. So it can happen, but there, you know, there's reasons behind the no thank yous. It's not a we hate you, at least not in your case. it's a not today, this isn't ready, and people don't like rejection. They don't like to be told no. And I've received four-letter word reactions to my emails of the worst kind from Christian authors. And you just kind of go, okay, you didn't get it. All you heard was no, and you thought I was slamming a door in your face. And yeah, maybe my response was short and not explanatory, but I'm not in the business of giving people free critiques either. This is what writers' conferences are for. This whole thing is it's a tough business. It's a hard business, but name me one that isn't, that's in the arts. Painting, dance, music, every single one of them has excellence involved in it. And you're a dancer. Goodness, I have a daughter who is a dancer, and she flew all the way to another city from where she was living for an audition, walked in, and they said, oh, you're an inch too tall. Didn't even watch her dance. And she goes, how was I supposed to know that? It's not in any of your material, but it was a rejection. And in that case, it's rather personal, but it's nothing she could do anything about. So she shrugged her shoulders and went, well, I learned a lesson. So any other audition she went to, she asked that question ahead of time. Do you have any height restrictions? You see, this is all part of the learning process. And everything in the arts is pointing toward a meritocracy. You are chosen by merit, nothing else. And merit isn't just how well you write. It's also what you have to present the market so that your books will be read and have an impact.
This is good. As we come to a close today, I'd love for you to share, what do you enjoy the most about owning a literary agency?
Oh, it's the sheer variety. Every day is like opening a Christmas package, because I have not only my own clients, but also the clients that Bob Hostetler and Tamala Hancock Murray have, and we're involved with each other's projects. So I get to see ideas almost every day. I live in the world of ideas. And again, the sheer variety is rather astounding and very encouraging, actually.
Well, I like to hear that encouraging word.
Oh, I mean, it's everything from, let's just call it the escapist novel, which has a value, a tremendous value to them, to, what was it, last year, sold a 380-page book on the atonement. That is all about penal substitution from a theologian. And it's one of the most extraordinary books you will have ever read on the topic. Probably not one that most of you are going to pick up for light reading. But this is an opportunity to be involved in that is really quite amazing. And it is truly what I love about the ideas, and then also the people. A lot of the authors I work with are friends. They are family friends. Got one that actually heard that they were moving to an area where one of my daughters lived, and ended up taking that daughter to lunch and just talking about life. And it was like, wow, you didn't have to do that. That was like family. That's really cool. And what Bob and Tamala bring to the agency, they're the ones that make me look good. So I really like having top quality people who also love authors and have a very similar philosophy grounded in theology as we approach what we do for a living. And it's quite amazing.
Well, it shows. It comes through in your voice. It comes through. I can hear you smiling when you're talking about this. And what a blessing to be in an industry doing something you love to do and really equipping others around you to reach, for a better word, their dream, to be able to complete a goal is fabulous. Absolutely wonderful. Well, folks, you can find out more about the Steve Laube Agency at stevelaube.com, L-A-U-B-E. .com. We do have that in the show notes for you for sure. And also in the show notes, be sure that you download this month's writer's tips and soul care tips for the writers. Got a brand new PDF every single month. So it gives you something new to look at, to maybe cut apart, post it someplace. We all need tips. We all need encouragement. We all need to be reassured that we're not alone, especially in this industry. You're not alone, no matter what troubles you're encountering. Thank you so much for joining us here today on Your Best Writing Life, Steve.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And thank you, friends, for joining us as well. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review, because what you have to say matters as much as what you have to write. This is Linda Goldfarb, and I look forward to being with you here next time on Your Best Writing Life.